Just a couple of weeks ago, we did a Virtue Signal segment with Alfonso Rachel called In Memoriam, where we talked about the importance of remembering things, that there was more to life than just saying, oh, well, they're gone, so to hell with them. And in that spirit, I thought I might dedicate a show, as I very unusually do, to remembering somebody who's passed away. And in this particular case, I'm talking about Norm MacDonald, the comedian, died of cancer just a few days ago. The reason that I felt like I'd want to spend a show talking about Norm MacDonald is there's a lot of parts to it. So we'll just start with the beginning. When I first saw Norm MacDonald on Saturday Night Live, I just absolutely despised the guy. I absolutely hated him. I just couldn't get what he was doing. I didn't understand it. I wasn't old enough. But of all the things to like about Norm MacDonald, I think probably the first thing to like about Norm MacDonald, and I'll come back and talk to Stephen Scott about this, but the first thing that I really realized about Norm MacDonald was Norm MacDonald flew in the face of political correctness before anybody had ever coined the term. His rebelliousness against being told what to do and what to believe pre-existed the term political correctness. And here's a quick look at that from Saturday Night Live when he did the weekend update for a year before he got fired for jokes like this one.
Who are safer drivers, men or women? Well, according to a new survey, 55% of adults feel that women are most responsible for minor fender benders, while 78% blame men for most fatal crashes. Please note that the percentages in these pie graphs do not add up to 100% because the math was done by a woman. For those of you hissing at that joke, it should be noted that that joke was written by a woman. So now you don't know what the hell to do, do you? No, I'm just kidding. We don't hire women.
Scott, I'm about to play another clip of a Norm MacDonald joke. It's the moth joke. And rather than play the clip first and talk about it, I thought it might be interesting to do this the other way around. The reason that this is such an amazing story is because it's long. It has to be long. It's required to be long. And the thing I like so much about this isn't even really a joke. In other words, the punchline to this joke is so bad that it leaves you realizing that the punchline is not what this joke is all about. Mark Twain talked about this as a distinctly American form of humor, the telling of a story in such a dry fashion, as you talk about something absurd, but you do it in such a dry fashion that the person telling the joke seems to be unaware of the fact that there's anything funny here. So what is it about the moth story that we're about to see that you find so charming without giving away the ending?
Well, because it's such a long joke, there's no threat that I'll remember all the details of it.
But it's worth it, though.
Yes. Yes, it is. I'll tell you, there's a couple of things. There are comedians that have tried in the past to just kind of unleash chaos on stage. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It more often generates kind of just like nervous laughter than real, you know, kind of
or
affinity.
Shock laughter,
yeah, just shock laughter. But I think one of the things you need to be a successful comedian is you need to stay on the monkey bars. And by what I mean by that is that there's a structure, there's an implied structure of who you are and what you're doing and what these people have come to see that you need to respect. And so only when you have at least one hand on the monkey bars can you keep that going. So that long story that he tells in the moth story doesn't work if he's not a stand-up comic at all. You know, if he's just a politician and he started telling that, they're like, wow, that was a boring story. But because he's a comedian, the anticipation builds constantly and he just milks that tension, that dramatic tension, as far as you could possibly take it, because you're thinking the punchline is coming. The punchline, what's the kicker here? What's he setting me up for? And so you're asking questions like crazy in your mind, which is perfect. It's just a beautiful thing. And I think I would just kind of summarize, that's what I loved about Norm MacDonald, really two aspects to his personality and that come together as one when he's in performance or when he's sitting in the chair talking to a talk show host. And that is, he has an almost childlike sense of joyful anticipation.
Glee, like in the moment glee.
Like you can see while he's talking, he knows what's coming and you don't, and he's already enjoying it in advance. And, you know, in our backstage episode, I likened it to a kid who kind of made up his own, fireworks, and the anticipation of creating that little explosive device and then taking it to the place that you were going to do it and then building the anticipation among your friends who were watching, like all of that is welling up inside of him so that he loves what he does. And I think any great artist or craftsman or even a tradesman is really wrapped up in kind of a joy in the work. It's that sense of a vocation, which comes from the root of a calling. You know, I had the sense that Norm MacDonald was called to do this.
He was.
And he found immense joy in doing it. And he was willing to carry out that little experiment in front of us and kind of with us. I felt like he was sitting next to me going, you know, hey, what do you think's going to happen? And it just built that anticipation that erupted in laughter so often.
Here's Norm at his most Norm.
A moth goes into a podiatrist's office, mm-hmm. and the podiatrist's office says, what's the problem? And the moth says, what's the problem? Where do I begin, man? He goes, I go to work for Gregory Linovich, and all day long I work. Honestly, Doc, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. I don't even know if Gregory Linovich knows. He only knows that he has power over me, and that seems to bring him happiness. But I don't know. I wake up in a malaise, and I walk here and there. And the podiatrist says, oh, yeah? And the moth goes, yes. And he goes, at night, I sometimes wake up, and I turn to some old lady in my bed that's on my arm. A lady that I once loved, Doc. I don't know where to turn to. My youngest, Alexandria. She fell in the cold of last year. Mm-hmm. The cold took her down as it did many of us. And my other boy. And this is the hardest pill to swallow, Doc. My other boy, Gregorio Ivanilidovich. I no longer love him. As much as it pains me to say, when I look in his eyes, all I see is the same cowardice that I catch when I take a glimpse of my own face in the mirror. If only the cowardice was stronger, then perhaps I could bring myself to reach over to that cocked and loaded gun that lays on the bedside behind me and end this hellish facade once
and for all. How long a drive was this?
He says, Doc, sometimes I feel like a spider, even though I'm a moth, just barely hanging onto my web with an everlasting fire underneath me. I'm not feeling good. And so the doctor says, Moth, man, you're troubled. But you should be seeing a psychiatrist. Why on earth did you come here? And then the moth said, because the light was on.
Steve, that joke is like Norm showing everybody that we're off to see the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. And when we get there, it's horrifically disappointing, but the journey was a blast.
Yeah.
And that joke works because of the actual pathos that he's able to generate, that sincere sense that he's just bearing his soul. And so I was stunned when I heard that he died, because he died of cancer. He'd been fighting cancer for apparently 9 years.
9 years.
I hadn't the faintest idea. And that's probably the thing I admire most about Norm MacDonald, was that he just never went there. Scott said he never went there because he was too good of a comedian, but there was just something utterly fearless about the guy, and fearless to the degree where he was not going to make himself immune from his own humor.
Yeah. Well, you made me get away from what I wanted to say, but this is important too, and I'll try to remember what it was I wanted to say originally. So many comics today, and this really started with Jon Stewart after he took over The Daily Show. They're not generating laughter. They're generating clapter is what they call it.
Where you perfect. It's exactly right.
Yes, where you say the politically correct thing that everybody agrees with, and they don't laugh at your jokes. It's not funny. They clap in agreement with you. And I don't think, in my mind, there's a greater insult that I could give a stand-up comedian than to say they're good at generating clapter. That's not comedy. And I don't think that, and this is just pure conjecture on my part, but based on what I know of Norm Macdonald through his comedy, he's not the guy who wants to be seen as the cancer comic who generates clapter because, oh, he's being so funny and brave about his condition. That's not the kind of comedian he is. I don't know what kind of a person he was other than what I can glean from what we know of his comedy and how he handled his cancer. In fact, I don't even know what his actual politics were. What did he think about the income tax? Should it be progressive? Should it be a sales tax? What did he think about national defense? I don't know any of these things about him. But I do know in one very important way, he was deeply conservative in that he was protective in his own work of the freedom of liberty to pursue his own work. The thing to remember about Norm Macdonald is he was funny. And that's such a strange thing to have to say, but it's the kind of thing we have to say in today's culture. He was fearless in going after the joke. It was usually a goofy joke. It was sometimes a brilliantly layered joke with one of the things that's brilliant about the moth joke, and by the way, a huge shout out to Conan O'Brien for being the perfect foil for that joke. Yep. His hosting instincts are just Carson-like in their quality, just absolutely impeccable. But one of the things about the moth joke is it's not set up punchline. It's tragic story, semi-punchline. Very few people could get away with that. But another thing he would do is, and I think we talked about this in backstage, as I think it was a joke that got him fired, is he'll do one setup followed by three punchlines, a sort of cascading right. thing where...
Like we saw with the women joke at the beginning.
Yes. So it's... When you say a comedian is offbeat, usually you mean he's offbeat because he dresses funny or he talks funny or he talks about strange material that other comics won't touch. He was offbeat in the structure of his jokes, and that's what caught you by surprise. And here's why political correctness can't be funny. Heinlein wrote years ago in Stranger in a Strange Land that laughter is about releasing pain from something that is wrong. How many jokes are about something going wrong during sex? How many jokes are about death? There's a wrongness there. This is where the funny comes from, and laughter is our stress
right.
release from that wrongness. And political correctness doesn't allow for wrongness. I said one of my famously wrong things my freshman year at Mizzou, hanging out with a couple of guys on my floor in my dorm, and one of the guys said a phrase I'd never heard before. He turned and looked at me and said, "Well, that wasn't very politically correct." And I said, "Well, what does politically correct mean?" I was a very innocent 18-year-old, I suppose. And he told me what politically correct means. And I said, "Well, that's copulating wrong," except I didn't say copulating. Mm-hmm. But you can't be funny and be politically correct because you're not allowed to feel the wrongness, which means you're not allowed to give the audience permission to release that through the joy of laughter. And Norm Macdonald always went after the laughter, and he was just fearless about it.
Absolutely. He just went right into the minefield and started to dance a little jig. Sometimes his humor is very simple. He once said, everybody, you know, calls me old Mr. Softy, but... frankly, I'd much rather be known as the elderly gentleman with erectile dysfunction. And so you can go there. But of all the things I admire most about Norm Macdonald is that I'd heard the routine I'm going to close with several times. It made me laugh every time. What I didn't realize was that he was the guy in the story. and he never let you knew, never let you know, rather, that he was the guy in the story. And now that he's gone, I realize that this was his way of making everything kind of okay with himself. I suspect that he went through this in his own mind, and all I can tell you is when it's my time to check out, I wish I could check myself out of the hotel with this degree of pathos and elegance and just plain humor. For Steve Green and Scott Ott, I'm Bill Whittle. Enjoy this close.
See, in the old days, a man could just get sick and die, you know? Now, they have to wage a battle. So my Uncle Bert is waging a courageous battle, which I've seen because I go and visit him, and this is the battle. He's lying in a hospital bed with a thing in his arm watching Matlock on the TV. Instead of that battle, I got him the box set of Matlock. And... But it's not his fault. What the f*** he supposed to do? Oh, I gotcha. It's just a black thing in his bowel. And the reason I don't like it is because in the old days, they go, hey, that old man died. Now they go, hey, he lost his battle. That's no way to end your life, you know. What a loser that guy was. Last thing he did was lose. He was waging a brave battle, but at the end, I guess he got kind of cowardly was what happened. And then the bowel cancer, it got brave. You got to give it to the bowel cancer. You know, they were in a battle, and then what the And I'm pretty sure, I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure if the cancer dies, I mean, if you die, the cancer also dies at exactly the same time. So that, to me, is not a loss, that's a draw. That's a, you know what I mean?
I want to talk to you about something, because this came up earlier in the show accidentally, because I didn't know what Norm was going to talk about tonight, and it's best sometimes if I don't know. But he mentioned Carrot Top. You are making a movie with Carrot Top, right?
I made a movie with Carrot Top.
Okay. You've made a movie with Carrot Top. It's not out yet.
Wait a minute. She left Melrose Place to do a movie with Carrot Top?
That's where I'm going, my friend. You have a scene where you and him embrace?
Yeah, lots of making out.
Oh, for God's sake.
Nothing but making out.
All right.
It's like 9.5 weeks, but Carrot Top. Basically, what we were doing.
Wow. I gotta check out that movie.
Is it called 9.5 seconds? Like he's premature ejaculator.
We got it.
You know what happened? This is what happened. You know what happened? He said 9.5 seconds, and I'm looking at him because I know there's more. And I wait and wait, and I see the glimmer in the eye, and then bang! I thought you were going to... But no. But what's the movie going to be called? Really?
I know what it's going to be called.
Yeah, what's that?
If it's got Carrot Top in it, you know what a good name for it would be?
What's that, Norm?
Box Office Poison.
And then too.
She's in it.
What about my career?
Courtney Thorne Smith, the girl sitting to your left, is in the movie.
I'm going
to
go see it for Courtney.
Steer everybody else away.
No, I love this girl. I would see any movie with this girl in it. She's a beautiful lady and a talented, nice talk show guest. Okay.
As evidenced by her appearance on our rival show. All right. Well, there's this 2-hour season finale of Melrose Place. There's this movie coming out.
Yes.
Title undetermined at this point.
Chairman of the Board.
Oh. All right. Do something with that, you freak.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.